and a lady from the PMG. You will recall, honorable members, last week when we were dealing with the bill, there was a suggestion that the department should go and tighten the accountability mechanism for the person who is who will be found responsible for any wrongdoing in performing his duties. And we will hand over to the department to brief us how they have coined that request. And in the meantime, we are awaiting the Treasury. Treasury will be part of this meeting later to come and brief us about the financial implications with regard to the bill. And the last item we are going to deal with is the progress report briefing from the Magistrates Commission. And without any waste of time, I'll hand over to the department to continue with the briefing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I, since last week, Friday, I distributed about, I think, 6 or 7 documents to the committee. For example, the Constitutional Court case, a legal opinion by the State Law Advisors, a body comments from the Minister of, or by the Minister of Finance, a summary of all the submissions that were received by the Portfolio Committee, as well as the a document seeking to give effect to the committee's request as far as the implementation issue is concerned. Jefferson, if I may take the liberty, maybe we should, as far as that, proposed amendments are concerned, perhaps we should await the presence of National Treasury, because it also to some extent affecting, because I initially prepared a document which was on an informal basis submitted to them with an option whether either the executive authority must institute the criminal proceedings or National Treasury. And then that was on an informal basis, and I was informed that it should be the executive authority. But then I would also like, I know the committee feels very strongly about this whole issue of implementation of the Act. I have prepared proposed amendments seeking to give effect to the committee's request. But I would like to suggest that the committee consider the possibility, instead of proposing these amendments, because we have not had the opportunity, due to the lack of time, to thoroughly consider the possible unintentional consequences of such a provision, number one. Secondly, we have not had the opportunity to consult with other departments as well as provinces, because it also affects provinces. So therefore, I would like to suggest that the committee considers the possibility to, in its report on the bill, request the department to investigate this matter thoroughly and then report back to the committee within a short period of time, instead of now rushing or pushing something which we have not considered all the intended consequences. So that would be my suggestion to this committee for possible consideration, because remember, the portfolio committee also requested the department to consider further possible amendments to the bill, for example, including local government and the effect of the present bill on all the other institutions, for example, the Human Rights Commission. So that there is already a request to the department to conduct further research as far as this matter is concerned. So that would be my suggestion for the committee to consider.
Honourable members, what is your feeling with regard to the suggestion? Honourable Matila.
Yeah, Chair, taking into consideration the situation that we're in, I think we will agree with the suggestion, but then indicate that there should be time frame put in place for the department to come back to us and report on that specific matter.
Honorable Gwinda, Honorable Makodi, Honorable Nessie Swahenda, okay.
Yes. See, the only thing is, if we agree now with the suggestion, are we then still going to wait for Treasury to come and then sort that thing out of Treasury? And then the time frame must be really in such a period. We must also bear in mind, we are closing next week. We are going on constitution period and reset. So the time frame must be quite right.
To give them time.
Yeah, but I think the other efforts on their side, I think there are also certain efforts that need to be made. Precisely because there are legal implications if they are not sort of dealing with that. Now, the idea is that the process goes on. But in the minute, it must be indicated that the Senate Committee would want them to come. But the portfolio committee has issues that they've raised. So together, maybe have a joint meeting so that we don't, as Senate Committee and portfolio committee, run parallel. Maybe have a joint meeting and have an understanding of going forward in terms of.
Chairperson, I was also going to support Honorable Matile, but what I wanted to get is clarification. I think it's linked to what Honorable Mokhori is saying, that I'm seeing here that you are expected on the 31st of August this year to have concluded. So I thought that whatever time frame we're doing, it's supposed to be, according to what I'm seeing here, unless you might be giving me more information. But I think our time frame should be within this one that has been provided here. I thought that maybe they will clarify to us if they need to do that. Thank you.
Norman Zimande.
Chair, also, mine is it's also a point of clarity, Chair. The suggestion by the presenter is suggesting that the two things, it's more process issue that I hear he's suggesting. He's suggesting that the bill, that the issues relating to us proposing amendments must be diverted into a report of the committee, of the select committee. Requesting them, directing them to come back and engage with us in those issues that otherwise, under normal circumstances, we would have effected amendments. That's how I'm hearing. If that's what I'm saying. If that's what I'm hearing, Chair, is correct in terms of the clarity that I'm raising. Therefore, it means, and also to link to what Honourable Kunda is saying, is that if that's the case, he's asking whether we still need Treasury. I guess we still need Treasury to come, because all of those matters that would have raised with treasure that would raise on the presentation of treasury would still form part of the of one report that will set the process of engaging on the otherwise recommendations that we would have effected as amendments in terms of consideration process of the bill. So basically, Chair, if that's the case, then what it means, therefore, is that the purpose of this meeting then, process-wise, would be for us to then make comments onto the bill as presented. And perhaps further, if we are endorsing it, which means then we're referring it, we would have concurred and therefore refer it back into the entity in terms of the process plan, I think. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Bloom.
Chair, thank you very much, and I must apologize. I was busy with something very urgent. But you see, Chair, yesterday in the WIPAR meeting, the question was asked, are we going to be ready by next week for us for the WIPAR to put it on the agenda for debate next week? So this thing, the time frame is very much important, because Gunda said next week we are closing. And the time lapse, if they can give clarity on that thing, the time lapse, then it's fine. We can give them time. But if it's going to hamper even the program of Parliament, the NCOP, then it's going to be a problem.
Sorry, Chair. My apologies that I didn't inform the committee. Yes, this very same bill has been this morning before program. And there's been agreed that because even my dear colleague in the Monday has explained it to the House, and it has been agreed and accepted that this thing will come in the next term to us. Because we even said it this morning on the Monday, said it's not going to be finalized today.
Yes.
I said to the programming committee that, Chair, as far as I'm concerned, in the last meeting, the committee didn't concretely submitted amendments to the bill. And therefore, I didn't foresee the any delays in terms of that. So if the committee today is not proposing amendments to the bill, then I don't see any problems in putting the bill, because it means we need a decision, a concurrence decision, so that then would put it into the referring process back to the NA. This is how I explained it. So I think for the people now, the request that came from the presenter, which has been endorsed by other honourable members, that they think they would not, they suggest that they think that the amendments that they think they hear we are proposing or we are suggesting in terms of the issues in the content or in the bill, they feel that they are not in a position to run the process. I think that's what they were suggesting. So we are talking to the suggestion, and I think members have endorsed that approach that says we will not effect amendments as it stands now, but a separate process of seeking to take care of the issues that we are raising, that which they agree with us, that are important and critical, be followed in the form of a report and other processes that the committee might feel might deem necessary and important. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Matida, you're the last one.
Yeah. Not yet. I think my understanding of the whole process was that was key to everything else was the implementation process. That was key. We were not amending anything in terms of this particular bill. I remember myself and Member Bloom were stressing on that specific issue, you see, because there were some concerns. Now, my suggestion to say we support the proposal put forward was that we wanted a process for them to come back to us in a way of saying how this is going to be implemented. As to how, because that might not come into the bill. It might be a separate process, you see. And that is the point I'm raising, that we are putting forward, that we endorse this particular bill, we move forward with it, but we then give the department a time frame to say come back to us by this particular period, because we want to know. Because by that period, as stipulated by my colleague here, by August, you must start implementing the bill as suggested by a court of law. And that is the situation. That's what we want to understand, and how I think we must move forward here. And therefore say, I propose that we endorse the bill, and propose that by the end of August, you come back to us, that we start with proposals around the implementation process, so that we can then, August, September, then deliberate on that and see, because you will start implementing then. So that would be my proposal.
I think that is the spirit of the discussion last week, because the core matter was implementability, accountability, something like that. In fact, we just wanted more details because we had documents right on the spot, but we don't understand that part. We were not dealing with the amendment. We also noted what the portfolio committee raised. You know, we noted them that as they are fine, but us, the issue was how then do we tie this thing to implementability? That was the core of the debate on that time. But if that can be taken out in terms of the process arranged by Martin, I think we need to endorse, because this is something like a court order of some sort.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. I think for us, we're very clear what our instructions are regarding how to take the process forward. As members have also articulated the time frame issues regarding to us going back to the Constitutional Court by the 31st of August, and also not to delay your already existing parliamentary processes in terms of your other commitments. What our proposal is based on two issues. The first one, correctly, as members have said, is that you raise concerns regarding the implementation. What are the consequences for people who fail to comply with this? Go back and come back and tell us what do you propose in terms of taking the process forward. So that was your main concern. And that concern is linked to the implementation post 31st August 2011. What we have done in that regard, we have two proposed amendments in response to your concerns, which we would like you to consider today. The second point is, after the bill comes into effect 31st August, as instructed by the Constitutional Court, we will then prepare you an implementation plan in terms of how compliance will be done post 31st August 2011. And we've already had suggestions, we've already started debating and engaging in terms of that. If I can say, remember, the first issue would be we will write to DGs, accounting officers, of all state departments, national and provincial, will write to ministers to say, now this is law and this is how it's going to be done, this is what the bill provides for, and this is what's required from you. And then, based on our proposed two subsections, 317 and 318, which we'll share with you now, how do we then put measures in place to ensure compliance, if members can accept that.
Honourable members, can we allow them to brief us with the proposals?
Yes.
Honourable Matila.
Just one clarity, because this process has already gone through the National Assembly and it was adopted. Now, to bring in those proposals, it means the bill must go back to the National Assembly, and they won't have time to deal with that situation. You see, they won't have time, and that will create serious problems. And therefore, we can share that, yeah? But I don't think it must go into the bill now. We can share that information, because if we propose amendments, it means we must delay the whole process again.
Honorable Blue?
No, Chairperson, you know what? What the presenter is saying here, the advocate is saying, is correct. Because it comes from this meeting last week. Now they are responding to what we are saying. So we can't reject that thing now. Let's give them chance and let them present and we adopt that thing, because it is correct. It is not them who have proposed these things, it's us in this meeting.
Can you continue?
I'll ask my colleague just to take members through those responses that you have provided. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just again want to emphasize that we as the department appreciate the concern that this committee has regarding the implementation of the law. But then, and this is now my personal view, that the amendments proposed by the committee will not really affect the coming into operation of the bill itself. And that is why I initially suggested that although I have prepared proposed amendments, that this committee give the department the opportunity to go in its report on the board, request the department to come back to the committee with concrete proposals. You see, Chairperson, for example, I can take the committee through this proposed amendments, but there are still so many outstanding questions that we were unable to answer or find answers for in the limited time period from last week, Tuesday, to today, number one. And secondly, there might be, if we consult all national and provincial departments, they may come up with totally different and maybe even more appropriate implementation processes. For example, if the members look at the proposed clause 17, clause 3 sub 17, their provision is made that a minister must institute criminal proceedings against his or her DG. Now, the immediate question that arises is what section is that created if a minister lays criminal charges against his or her DG? Shouldn't there be perhaps National Treasury in giving that responsibility, seeing that they will sort of be the central body knowing of all these matters in view of the fact that all outstanding matters have to be reported to them? And then a further question is, although I have provided that the Minister of Justice must table in Parliament on a 6-monthly basis a report indicating to Parliament the matters that have not been, or judgment dates that have not been satisfied within the period specified in the bill itself. Number two, the reasons therefore. And number three, what steps have been taken against the accounting officer who failed to comply with the provisions of this bill. But another issue that has been raised in the meantime is, should the Minister of Justice only report on outstanding matters, or should he or she also report on all judgment dates, whether it has been satisfied or not, to Parliament? And then, further question which immediately comes to mind is, once those or that information has been submitted to Parliament, should we give Parliament additional powers to act, or should those information, that information only be submitted to Parliament for information purposes? So the point I want to make to this person is that there are still, so in my view, still so many outstanding issues that need to be considered and for which we need to try and find answers. And that's why I initially suggested that the committee in support requested the department to look at the matters, give us, say, 6 months to report back to the committee with concrete proposals. That is a suggestion which I get the trend that the committee supports, but which I would like the committee to consider for the final inclusion in its report on the bill. And because, as members have said, as far as implementation is concerned, it's not necessarily necessary maybe to take amendments to the bill. There may be other ways that we can sort of ensure the implementation, but those are still issues that need to be considered. And if the committee, as a committee pointed out, if the committee decides to propose amendments, assuming it's a 675 bill, if the committee decides to propose amendments, it will have to go back to the NA, and then my concern is that we may not be able to make the deadline of the court of 31st of August. So, but as I said, I'm prepared to take the committee through these proposed amendments. It's only two subsections that we propose that need to be added to the existing section, or the proposed section 3, for the committee then to consider, and then the committee must decide on its approach on the way forward.
Okay. You can take us through. In the meantime, let me welcome two gentlemen from Treasury. You are welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just quickly get my book. Clause 3, subsection 15 at the moment, provides that an accounting officer who fails to comply with the provision of this section dealing with the satisfaction of judgment or any regulations, circulars, guidelines issued by Treasury, either provincial or national, is guilty of an offence. The committee's view at the previous meeting was it will serve no purpose to have such a provision in the Act if it is not implemented. So what I've done, I've prepared a provision providing or attempting to provide for the implementation of that clause. But it's very difficult, Chairperson, in the sense that the fact that an offence has been created, then to create an implementation mechanism. But what I've done, I've said that I've prepared the draft amendment providing that the executive authority or the minister of the department must, where his or her DG has not complied with the satisfaction of judgment dates within the time period, must institute criminal proceedings against that DG. But as I've mentioned earlier, and I think the Treasury and especially the Accountant General may sort of assist me, is I'm just concerned, number one, whether the individual ministers should institute those kind of criminal proceedings, number one. Number two, shouldn't it be a central body, for example, okay. National Treasury?
Yes, Louis.
Can we have the presenter? Because he's interacting with his thoughts. you know, let him just straightforwardly, because we've now given him the platform to present the subsection. I think he's tried to interact with with all the angles. Can he just put the proposed, whatever is proposed?
Can you do so that we hand over to Treasury so that they clear some of the issues to us?
Because my apology, the reason why I mentioned all those ideas is just to give the committee an idea of how many outstanding issues there are still as far as this matter is concerned. But to come back to the proposed amendments, I propose that a clause be, a subsection be added, providing that when an accounting officer, in other words a DC, has failed to comply with the or to satisfy a judgment debt within the periods prescribed in the state liability amendment law, that his or her minister must then ensure that criminal proceedings be instituted against that accounting officer. That was the first part. Then I also propose that a new subsection 18 be added, providing that the executive authority of a department, in other words, Minister or MEC, must on two separate dates submit to the cabinet member responsible for the administration of justice, in other words, the Minister of Justice, particulars of final court orders against his or her department that has not been satisfied within the prescribed time period, the reasons for not satisfying, and then what steps have been taken against the accounting officer, in other words, the DG, who has failed to satisfy within the prescribed time period. Then the provision is further made that the Minister of Justice must, on a 6-monthly basis, in other words, the 31st of March, which is the end of the financial year, and the 30th of September, which is the middle of the next financial year, submit to Parliament a report on those information. In other words, outstanding matters, reasons why, and steps taken against the accounting officer. Chairperson, and that is the proposed amendments that I prepared, seeking to give effect to the committee's request or instructions received at the LTV's meeting last week. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, do you want to engage with those proposals, or should we give to Treasury? Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. May I also apologize for arriving late. When this meeting got scheduled, there was already an invitation I had from the Human Settlements to explain certain aspects of the Public Finance Management Act. So I started there, Chair. Thanks for allowing me to arrive late. The issue that is troubling Johan in his head around whether you should have a central point for instituting criminal proceedings, Chair, the Treasury is of the view, and already in terms of the PFMA, each department has to institute criminal proceedings against people in that department, at least to the extent that the issues involved relate to the violation of the PFMA. Then these matters are dealt with in Chapter 10 of the PFMA and in Chapter 4 of the Treasury Regulations. And Paragraph 422 of the Treasury Regulations states that if the accounting officer of a department does not institute action, Treasury may direct that institution institute a criminal proceeding. What is envisaged in that 422, Chair, is that the minister in the executive authority in that department would. The only complication that you would have here is in a provincial setting, because in a provincial setting, heads of departments, which are the accounting officers, are appointed by the premier. And not by the respective MEC. So the Premier's office would be the office then that takes the matter of criminally charging accounting officers in a province. So the only matter would be in the province where the execution won't be at the department level because of the strange arrangement that obtains there, where the accounting officer is not appointed by the MEC. In fact, the relationship is directly with the Premier, it seems. Whereas in the national sphere, even though every accounting officer is appointed by cabinet and signed off by the president, still the accountability line goes through the minister. So there's that disparity in as far as the provinces. But the view is that the action must, as a primary point of departure, be taken by the department concerned. Now, failure of that department to take this matter up still leaves the rest of government with an issue that needs to be dealt with. And it's only in those circumstances that then other arms of government would have to institute. And that would come, for instance, committees of parliament can then say to the executive authority, take action, because there is that accountability to parliament as well. Of all the executive authority members. So the enforcement of the legislation, I think it's a matter that should be, already we have devices in our system where in fact committees can direct that certain actions be taken, can direct that executive authorities act in a particular manner, and I think we should leave it to that arrangement. And then the rest of the issues, I think I share the view that if possible, it would help the government for this legislation to go through now and then perhaps address some of the issues that Elisa says, given the fact that the judgment gave us up until the end of August to come up with the legislation. Thanks, Chair. I think that's the issue that I needed to address myself, unless there's other issue that I'm missing, Johan. Okay. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable members, Honourable Matila, Honourable Blue.
Chair, in the last meeting, our discussions centered around the bill as it stands, also taking into consideration the issues raised now. We were aware. Next week, like we pointed out, some of us were in scope. What we found out in that particular area is the PFMA is not implemented. Now, what we wanted to understand is what is it that can assist us leading to this particular bill to make sure that these issues are implemented. And that's where the keys are concerned. I mean, throughout the whole country, the PFMA through provinces, whatever, is not implemented. You go to municipalities, the Municipal Financial Management Act is also not implemented. You know, those are the problems. And there's nothing wrong with the bill. We agree with the bill. The issue was, how do we make sure that we find an enforcement process? Because committees do recommend, but accounting officers will always ignore that area. You know, they do recommend because committees can only recommend; they can't enforce, which is a problem. And that's the point I wanted to raise. That's why, members, I proposed that earlier. That let us endorse the bill, but let the department come back with a process of assisting us around enforcing this, because it is useless to come up with nice bills like we have, but they are not implemented. No. That is the problem that we are trying to deal with, Chair, and that is the situation I wanted to raise.
No,
Chairperson, yeah. You see, Treasury is raising the issue of centrality. But you see, B, we have proposed it, and I fully agree, and I will stand by this, that the cabinet member responsible for justice must submit a report each and every year. That is the implementation part that we are talking about. You see, the oversight, the parliament must know that in department what and department what and where did the executive member take action against such a member. I will agree. Let us adopt this bill with the amendments, or we put these amendments in regulations or something. But I agree. But we must adopt what is said, especially B. There must be an oversight mechanism, and Parliament must do that, because these things are not being implemented, as my colleague is saying. It's nice bills, nice laws, and whatever. The implementation of it. Now, if Parliament is the watchdog over that, I'm telling you, it will be implemented. Thank you.
I think the proposals, the members are satisfied that it covers their concern with regard to the enforcement.
Mm.
And as a result, we agree, members, that on Rumba Dila.
Yeah, no, Chair, I think what we agree upon is let the bill go through. Yeah. In terms of regulations towards this particular bill, we then bring in the enforcement, you know, so that we don't delay the process stipulated here in terms of the court order. That is the point I'm going to raise.
Honorable Mkhobi?
Chair, I think I also agree generally with what the Honorable has said. But going forward, why I would want us to adopt the bill as presented, and then with those arrangement of regulation of enforcement, as they come back, maybe showing this is how it's going to be implemented. I'm awaiting because the portfolio committee has adopted. All right, and we are emphasizing which amendment now. I want to avoid mediation committee, so that we should emphasize that now, you know, because the portfolio committee has raised certain things that will be dealt after. I thought we would also do the very same thing that as they come, this is what we need to do in terms of enforcement. So that I would say we need to be clear, you know, look to say we endorse the bill as it is. And secondly, after August, that's what we are bringing. A point, whether regulation, whether what, how do you implement? So that when we make oversight, we are able to call the minister to say, this is what we did on this day, but you are not implementing. It's very important. Because the only read in general, if you go deep into detail, we might need another week to deal with this matter, because it's also say it's not complete. One document I say is not complete, it's complete, so you again. But all those things that I say is not complete are not necessarily relevant in my view, because they are talking of inclusion of local government and forgetting that local government is a sphere on its own. It has got its own legislative and executive authorities different from the province and national. Mm-hmm. And we must be drawing ourselves unnecessary because we don't even have a single public service legislation yet. That will make things to be part. And therefore, let's endorse these things, but as the implementation goes on, maybe after that, when we meet the minister, there might be a need for gradually, progressively reviewing the entire, in my view, if we go the line of single public service and all sorts of, if that one would need years or whatever.
Honorable Bloom.
Now, Chairperson, we must take the advice from the present. What is the name again? Johan has made a proposal to say he's giving the committee 6 months, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next.
No, Chairperson, is for the committee to decide how long the committee
wants to
give us. But as I indicated,
and I think it's
that they are still very much issues.
Yeah.
To be considered.
No, I agree with you. Let's not rush. I take your advice, and I will support that. Otherwise, we are going to make a blunder out of this chapter.
Honourable members, let us not confuse issues. We have agreed. to endorse the bills, and we are aware what are those outstanding issues that we will deal with after the 31st of August.
No, and on this amendment?
They will be part of the regulations after the 31st.
Regulations is something else.
Yes.
If we imprint this in the bill, it will be more stronger than regulation. He has the learned friends, they can tell you.
Chair, I don't think we have a problem with that particular process. This amendment can come in because you are coming back with other amendments as you indicated, you know, can then come in that particular process because we are saying at this particular point, to avoid mediation, because that particular point will take us to mediation. Because NA has endorsed something different, has endorsed the bill as it is. And then also to make sure that we don't delay the bill and to find that they can't meet the deadlines of the courts. Because we are going away for a month. Coming back is a problem for us to endorse that particular process. Because there will be that problem between NA and the possibilities you might be overseas. You know, when do you come back and do the mediation and all those things? Thank you, Chair.
Can Gershon clarify something, Honourable Members?
Honourable Members, I think to clarify something, the bill will not go for mediation. The, according to Section 75C, if the Council passes the bill subject to amendments, the Assembly must reconsider the bill, taking into account any amendment proposed by the Council. And then, one, pass the bill again, either with or without the amendment, or decide not to proceed with the bill. The bill will not come back to the Assembly. A bill passed by the Assembly in terms of the previous paragraph must be submitted to the President for assent. So what the NCOB will, if we propose an amendment, the NA will sit and consider the amendment. Then they've got two choices. Either pass the bill with the amendment or pass the bill, reject the bill completely. In which case, the bill will either fall away or go directly to the President.
Chair, we are not going through this process for the first time. Having read the sections you are talking about, and that took us to mediation, you see. Now, I'm saying I don't want us to go through that process. Because
will not take us to mediation.
It will, because that's what happened in the last one that took us to mediation. We read that thing. It took us to mediation because they had to set up a committee for these two committees to look at that particular situation and agree on a process. Like, what you are saying looks nice. No, it has been read, but we have gone through the process, and I don't want us to go through that process because it's going to delay the whole process.
can I, in this regard, I can understand Honourable Blom's concern in terms of wanting to see the proposed changes that we have made as a result of your concerns that you have shared. And I can also understand other members' views regarding not delaying the process for purposes of compliance, but also to look at post-31st August in line with other concerns and considerations that might come up. After we've learned and see the challenges in implementing this bill, then we can put them together. What I would suggest, Chair, is that Section 3, subsection 14A of the current bill as it stands gives National Treasury authority to make rules, regulations, instructions, circular guidelines and reporting with regard to whatever conduct in ensuring compliance with this law. What we can do, the Accountant General, is to see whether can't we take this provision or this proposal and deal with them in that way. That's one option. The second option is, as we pass legislation, then with implementation, we learn different experiences, that is, challenges to the existing bills, which will prompt us to make further amendments to the amended bill already. So it's rather the easiest way, it's by way of, we're taking sections 314A,
to deal with the current proposals here, which might be a very prudent thing to do by Treasury, because Treasury is in the center, in the heart of this process in terms of compliance. That is a proposal which might sound quite easy in terms of dealing with that. And then if you're not satisfied, then after that period of implementation, having given a report in terms of the challenges that we've experienced implementing the provisional bill, then we can propose a formal amendment to the bill, which might take another process, or we go the route of Section 3, Section 4A. Thanks.
Chairperson, the first suggestion, as is just raised now, what's already in the bill now, I think we must go that route, Chair. It will save us time, it will help us, because we're still going to come back after the implementations and all these things. And then we can come with the new things and all that. Then there is no such thing like the NA said this and the NSOP said that. And then we can do this thing together. But I would also propose, Chair, when they come back with the implementation of this thing, after the 31st of August, I think we must jointly with the NA same time. We will save time and all those things for them to come to us, go to the NA. It's a lot of money. So I would agree and make a proposal that we go that route, but right now in the bill, and Chair, we will save a lot of time. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Matila, Honourable Blum.
No, Chair, agreeing with the first suggestion that will take account of the concern raised by Honourable Blum, you know, that when we come back from recess, Treasury should have already must start now to prepare the issues you have raised, so that they come here, we get a report as to how are they going to assist to implement that particular bill, you know, so that we know exactly as to what regulations the Treasury is going to make in line, because if the instruction will be that the Minister, as Commissioner Bloom indicated in terms of that particular area or proposed amendment, then we take that specific route. It's going to assist us to move faster, and, you know, so that when the department comes back with all the issues you have raised, you know, we are able to can deal with them holistically. But also take into consideration that the next process will be that we have a joint meeting, so that we don't have this problem where the NA does that and it comes here, there's that confusion.
Chairperson, it's a comment.
Can you just adopt and then you'll comment after we have adopted the bill?
No, before we comment, before we adopt the bill, that's fine.
Okay.
I thought the Bush lawyer will sympathize with the Leonard lawyer, and then we have agreed. Let the Bush lawyer comment it.
No, Chairperson, it's a small comment.
Okay.
When you are making a law, you must make a concrete and a thorough law. You must not deal with time is not on our side. We are going to live with this thing for the rest of our life. That's why I'm saying, we must never do that thing to say time is not on our side, we must push this thing through. I will agree, I don't have any problem, but I'm just commenting to say that we must never do that thing. Next year I won't be here, but this will govern my children and my children's children and my grandchildren and everything. We must never do that to say we are rushing through a thing because there's no time.
Can anyone move for the adoption of the bill?
I move. I'm going forward.
In a second. Now we do. Thank you very much, members. We agree with the bill without any amendment.
But we have passed it.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and thank you very much for Treasury and Department of Justice. We will communicate with you and agree on a date when we'll meet the next time. Thank you very much. Honorable members, this report will read like the report of the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development, the development on the State Liability Amendment Bill B2B 2011. The Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development, having considered the State Liability Amendment Bill referred to it, reports that it has agreed to the bill without amendments. Agreed?
Agreed, Judge.
Thank you very much.
I just have one question. Will this building serve before the NCC House next term?
No.
Next week?
Next
Tuesday.
Okay.
You'll get tournament bonus.
What?
Yes, morning, Chair. Colleague, sorry that I'm late, but I had to attend another meeting. In programming committee this morning, I probably spoke out of turn, and I apologize if I did, but I had a call from an official from the Chief Whip's office saying that the department wanted to bring some amendments to that bill that you've designed.
No, we have dealt with that.
So it's out. But it was on the strength of a call that I got as party leader.
Okay.
From the Chief Whip's office that I made that comment.
Oh, okay.
So we are now debating it on Tuesday.
Yes. No, you are released.
Just one last question.
Yes.
This bill was not debated in the NA. The chair has only made a declaration. Will it be debated in the NCP or what is like in the college? Well, the reason why I want to know is just to prepare my minister for the process that will be followed in the NCP. Sorry for asking that question, but as it in the NA.
No, I think we'll just make a statement. It's not going to be debated. We'll make a statement.
Never. It was all trying to prevent. Yes, Bralouis. You know me, Bralouis. This is Dennis Vicar Bloom. You see that Vicar? You know? No, Louis, you know what? When the security police will come to my house, they will say, yeah, on Super Dennis Vicar Bloom. Yeah. Who are Vicar? I'm like, no, that Vicar is me. It's not Dennis. Dennis Vicar Bloom. And the terrible twin son from Batman.
Yeah. Come the magistrate commission, and without any waste of time, give over to them to brief the committee. Over to you, Mr. Mingus.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, these are progress reports. As you are aware, the Parliament already provision suspended or confirmed the provision suspension of all these magistrates, and you just need to be informed about the progress thus far in respect of the disciplinary inquiry, as well as if they are criminal charges levelled against these magistrates, what the outcome they are. I don't have a program, Chairperson, but I believe we start with Mr. Rambeau. Chairperson, Mr. Rambeau stands accused of corruption. It is alleged that he, together with the prosecutor and the attorney, arranged the outcome of a trial by predetermining the sentence for financial reward. Now, this the criminal matter commenced on the 8th of February, 2010. And it is still partly heard. The second statement is under cross-examination at the moment. In the meantime, the Magistrates Commission commences its disciplinary inquiry. He was duly served with a notice in that regard. And the misconduct inquiry was set down for the 9th of February. Mr. Rambeau requested the presiding officer to postpone the inquiry until the criminal case against him has been finalized, since the criminal charges preferred against him form the basis of the disciplinary charges, the proceedings against him. And this request was granted by the presiding officer, and it was postponed to the 8th of April. On the 8th of April, he requested both parties to address him on whether or not he should postpone the misconduct inquiry is in the DA, pending the finalization of the criminal case against Mr. Rambeau, and for him to enable him to instruct an attorney, a legal representative. At their person, like I said, the criminal case against Mr. Rambeau is still part heard. It has been postponed to the 29th of August for that week, until the 2nd of September, and then another week in October. He also faces another criminal charge against him, to wit, conspiracy to commit murder. This case stands remanded to the 5th of September 2011 for trial. It is alleged that he approached the Sangoma to eliminate the state witnesses in a corruption case. There were 10 people on the list. At the misconduct inquiry on the 8th of April, Mr. Rambeau applied again for the proceedings to be postponed. He didn't have his attorney present. His attorney didn't have a mandate, and he appointed counsel. Now, the presiding officer again granted his request for a postponement. provided that Mr. Rambeau's counsel should appear before him on the remand date, and that he should formally request the commission to be furnished with further particulars. He requested further particulars from the commission. On the 20th of June, it was on Monday, counsel appeared indeed on behalf of Mr. Rambeau. No further particulars were requested from the commission at that stage, and the defense again requested the postponement pending finalization of the criminal matter against Mr. Rambeau. They indicated that the criminal case would likely be concluded in the week of October, and the presiding officer postponed the inquiry until the 12th of September 2011. Chairperson, if Mr. Rambeau is found guilty, then of course the commission will have an option to charge him in terms of the regulations that he's been found guilty of the offense. It's quite a complex case. A trap was set. There were agents who will still testify, will have to testify. Telephonic conversations were tapped, and these people also have to testify in the criminal case. The commission is of the view that we might as well wait the outcome of the criminal case. If it's unduly delaying it, we can commence with the leading of evidence in the misconduct inquiry. If the presiding officer granted the postponement.
Chair, the worrying thing here is he's probably getting salary, and this whole thing started in February 2010, so he's now earning a salary at the taxpayer's expense and being charged. But I don't understand is that if he's found guilty on a charge like this, isn't there in the statutes provision for immediate dismissal? Why should there then still be an inquiry for the misconduct if the court finds him guilty? At the same time, if the court finds him not guilty, what are the chances of the misconduct being successful?
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the criminal charge, or he has not been convicted as yet, but we requested Mr. Rambeau to show cause why he should not be, why his salary job should not be withheld in terms of the act, specifically referring to the second criminal matter preferred against him. The commission was of the view that since he's not been convicted by a court of law as yet, that we should not withhold his salary. That is the practice of the common practice of the commission. With regard to if he is found not guilty, the onus of proof is different in a disciplinary hearing. We only have to prove in a balance of probabilities that he is found guilty, and we have already charged him in respect of, well, of contravening the code of conduct for magistrates. So I think we would be successful in proving that he is guilty on the balance of probability. So, but that depends on the witnesses and the testimony which will be placed before the presiding officer. It's a difficult situation.
Yeah, but if he's found guilty, that's all right. If he's found not guilty, then that process is good. But if he's found guilty, you still have to have a disciplinary process. Isn't fraud and things like that immediate dismissal?
Chairperson, what does immediate dismissal? You can't dismiss a magistrate who's holding an office, a public office, without conducting a disciplinary inquiry, and then of course Parliament has to remove him from office. Well, actually the Minister on the advice of Parliament, once Parliament has passed a resolution that this particular magistrate is not fit to hold the office of magistrate any longer, then it is for the Minister to remove him from office. But we have to proceed with a disciplinary inquiry in this regard.
Yes,
is the presenter saying therefore that the proceedings of the commission are now taking the timelines of the court case? I think that's what Honorable Watson is trying to get at as well. Is that because if you charged him on a separate process
And as long as that is that present, why are you not concluding then on this matter before it's the before the he's enjoying a lot, I mean this salary for too long and only go and only get convicted afterwards and another process of appeal and all this and all that. So when are we seeing finality on the on the charge by the commission?
Exactly.
Thanks.
Chair, I was just trying to, in line with what my colleague has just indicated, are you saying through this whole process that the taxpayer is going to just foot the bill until, because an appeal might take 2-3 years again? Which is the problem? Because it can appeal at different levels of the justice system. And because you see, our concern here is what is happening to the taxpayers. Because you could have been appointing another magistrate to continue there. Now you are paying two salaries for one position. And that's the concern we are raising here. Because what is wrong with withholding that salary? If needs be, if he wins the case, then you just pay him off. What is, when he loses the case, it was clear that you couldn't pay him. What? Because if you look at the seriousness of this particular matter,
exactly where I was leading to. I would like to actually recommend, suppose that this committee recommends that the process of disciplinary doesn't wait for the court case, which can be postponed ad infinity, and go ahead, because if you're so sure that procedurally you will succeed, don't wait for the court case. Carry on. Court case can go its route. It's a criminal offence. But as an office bearer of the state, and especially in the judicial, he should go if he's proven. I propose that we recommend that.
Hello, we do.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We must also be very careful. We are lawmakers here. And if the law is saying that the magistrate can't be suspended without money, then it's the law. The two magistrates must tell us what the law is saying. Then we must abide by that. If there's a provision in the law to do what Honorable Watson is saying, then it can also be implemented. But we must not do a thing against the law, and go against what we have drafted in this building.
Now, I'm not saying that we should withhold his salary. That has been cleared. What I'm saying is that we shouldn't wait for this long drawn out court case in terms of the criminal charges, but that departmentally or in terms of the misconduct, he should be, that disciplinary hearing should go ahead. And so that he can be removed if necessary from his position, and he can go to jail 2 years later. That's another thing.
Sanjay, I would speak after the magistrate just make give us clarity.
Okay. Yeah, Chairperson, all these matters were also fully debated by the Magistrates Commission, and you will note that the Commission's previous stance in these matters were that if a magistrate has been stands accused of a criminal offence, we should await the outcome thereof before commencing with a disciplinary inquiry. The newly appointed chairperson, the Honourable Justice Lahori, is of a different view, and he says we should continue, depending on the merits of each matter, with a disciplinary inquiry. Now, in this specific matter, the defense, Mr. Rambau says that the witnesses for the state, if they testify in a criminal case and simultaneously in a disciplinary hearing, they may contradict themselves. And it may be in jeopardy of the state. The state also didn't want a commission to proceed with the disciplinary inquiry because they may prejudice its case. So it was fully argued before the presiding officer
and the presiding officer granted the postponement, but also provided that the disciplinary process be monitored. Now, from the commission side, we are requesting, or we have requested, a regional court president to provide a regional magistrate as well as the prosecuting authority to provide a prosecutor to deal with the criminal case on an ad hoc basis. That's why the criminal case has not been postponed for so long. It has really it commenced, but it is every time on the side of the defense that I have an objection against points in limine. Well, that's the law. The law doesn't say, I must say, with regard to the withholding of remuneration, that if a magistrate has been provisionally suspended, or in case of a magistrate already being suspended from office by the minister, when the commission recommended his removal from office, that in terms of section 13.4a, the commission may determine to withhold his remuneration at any stage, whether he's provisionally suspended or suspended. But the commission is of the view that once convicted, he can determine to withhold the remuneration, irrespective of whether there's an appeal pending. Chairperson, this is quite a complex matter. If we have to leave the evidence of all the other witnesses in the state case, which you do not intend to do, but it will take months and it will be very costly. So in this regard, we did put the commission's version and stance and its policy to the presiding officer, but it's for him to decide whether to grant the postponement or not. And it's not in the far future. October is around the corner. They say, well, the defense said, the criminal matter will be concluded by that time. If it's not been concluded, we can still commence with our inquiry. And that's the intention. But this is the final postponement given by the presiding officer. Who is the chief magistrate of Pretoria?
You can continue with the Honourable Simande.
I think, Chair, what we are saying is the committee, we don't agree with the commission. And I'm not sure where does that land. So our recommendation, I mean, I hear the explanation, but, I'm not too sure. Technically, the argument that if for the purposes of misconduct, if you listen, are these hearings conducted? Maybe let me ask that question. Are they conducted in public or are they in camera? What is the scenario? Because what you have, is there anything compelling that what you've had as a commission could then be used in a court of law? Because I see this process as totally separate. If you are investigating for the purposes of misconduct, the set of questions might even be totally different as those of a criminal offense. So I don't find the interdependence of the matter, of the process, so to speak. So I would say what the Honourable Watson was saying, I do feel that the explanation is not convincing to me. I don't know with the rest of the members. So perhaps let me end it here. What would be the further response here? Thanks.
Chair, I've listened to the explanation of the Magistrates Commission. I fully agree what Honourable Nzimande and Honourable Watson is saying. I think, Chair, the merit of this case is very, very, very serious. And I can't understand that on such merit that they couldn't continue with the disciplinary hearing. I can't. For me, it's not right that a magistrate
there's such a case against a magistrate, and this is not one case, the seriousness of the case, that's my concern, Che. Why? What stops them? I've heard you say some of the witnesses can come and contradict them. You can't come and say to the committee, some of the witnesses can say this in a disciplinary hearing and in a criminal court to say a different story. Then they don't know. Can they trust the witness? Because the witness can't come and say two different things in the same case. Whether it's in a criminal court, whether it's in a disciplinary hearing. Because those things will be used on both cases, they will be used. Those testimonies will be used. So it's not clear why they can't. What stops them from having a disciplinary hearing against this man at the same time? Let them move simultaneously. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, maybe just to get some clarity, because there's this government drive of making sure that disciplinary hearings, are not dragged out. They are actually finalized within 6 months, so that the state does not spend a lot of money on salaries and all those things. I'm not sure as to where, because I can see in most instances, when the Magistrates Commission comes to bring reports to us, a matter has been there for a year or 2 years, whatever, I'm saying most of them, not all of them. And then this is the problem. Where's that drive from the commission itself to implement this process that government wants to see happening?
And Robertson?
Yeah, I'm listening to everything, and I can see the difficulty of two sets of hearings and the same people leading evidence. But my question is, what is our role? Why are we meeting here? Are we just meeting to understand the decision of the commission, or do we really have the power to, as Honourable Louis has said, to recommend changes? What is our role? That I think we must clarify. Son, that's the question that begs honestly.
Yeah, who must answer that question?
I'm hearing that Honorable Watson is saying that there would be same people leading the evidence. I'm not too sure why would it be the same people? Can I be clarified? Because I thought that people that are the commission itself is running its own misconduct processes with its own people. So the state witnesses would have made would do these things under oath. So I'm trying to simplify it to understand, because those two, the two cases, for me, it's not the same matter. You see, if someone is looking for a criminal offense to make a criminal charge, it's something else. But someone is saying there is a misconduct that we have observed, and here are the things that here are the elements that constitute that misconduct, and you have people to say to confirm what you are saying are the elements that constitute misconduct. So perhaps they need to clarify us in these things. Thanks.
Hello,
Chairperson, thank you. Following what Mr. Watson has asked, I think Mr. Watson is right. And I think that this report comes to us for us to also give input. Now, we must come with a recommendation to the magistrates to say that we are recommending that this case, the disciplinary case, must be finalized within 30 days from today. That is our recommendation. And the commission must then implement that thing from our side.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any
you can respond to that. Thank you, Chairperson. It's quite a mouthful.
Can I just commence with what Honorable Watson inquired, is that the purpose of the progress report in terms of section 13.3F is it must be concluded as soon as possible, and the commission, of course, the inquiry must be concluded as soon as possible, and the commission must cause a report on the progress in respect of that inquiry to be submitted to Parliament every 3 months. Now, Parliament may, at any stage, pending the conclusion of an inquiry, referred to in paragraph E, or a resolution referred to in subsection 4C, that is now the provision suspension, pass a resolution setting aside the suspension of the matters concerned, whereupon the suspension shall lapse forthwith. Chairperson, with regard to the, let me sketch this scenario. In this case, there's an investigating officer, there was a trap set, in terms of section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act. There were two agents who were set up. It's the theft of a motor vehicle. And it is alleged that Mr. Rambeau and the prosecutor and the attorney for the accused, that the accused was one of the agents, that they, in advance, during telephonic consultations, made an arrangement to be paid. For instance, if found guilty, he would plead guilty on the charge, then there would be a sentence imposed of 50,000 rand or 5 years imprisonment, for instance. And they agreed on a sentence of 10,000 rand. And another 10,000 rand was split up between the magistrate, the attorney, and the prosecutor. Now the nexus, and then the whole investigating in that regard, is quite complex. I mean, there were telephonic conversations which were tapped. We need to also lead the evidence of those people. And those are experts. Now, the status of the view, if we commence with the disciplinary inquiry in this specific matter, and leading the evidence of the investigating officer first, and they proceed simultaneously with the criminal matter, then that would be a clash of interests. And that might prejudice the state's case. Because he may be testifying in another way, that he would be testifying in a criminal matter. That there may be contradictions. Although that's for the court to eventually decide on. But that was also placed before the presiding officer, and that was a request from the defense. And that is our view too, that as soon as the first state witness is testified in a criminal case, we can proceed to lead his evidence in a disciplinary inquiry. So if this criminal matter is dragged out beyond October, then we can commence a disciplinary inquiry. And that was what the presiding officer also ruled at. It wouldn't prohibit the commission to proceed. In some instances, we have a prima facie case and we can commence. And that wouldn't pose a problem. But this matter is a bit complicated. And the charges are very serious. So we need to successfully charge him and have him have a conviction or a finding of guilty of misconduct. We really need to do our homework properly. Like I said, we have the docket before us. We received a copy of the docket. One of the witnesses for the state compiled a statement containing of 10,000 documents, 10,000 pages. Oh. So that's a lot to work through. If that has been submitted in a criminal case and it's not been contested, then we can use that. We don't even have to use that particular witness and ask him to appear before the committee or before the tribunal to testify on behalf of the commission. And it is very costly as well. We need to take all these factors into account. The proceedings are in public unless the presiding officer resolves otherwise. So it's open for the public. Yeah, chairperson, to drive up and speed up these proceedings, it's very difficult. You know, they have the constitutional right to legal representation. It's unlike labor law. They raise points in limine. I mean, a magistrate is also a man of law. He knows exactly, he knows the tricks. I must say, they know exactly what they're up to, and they will fight for their office. So, if points in limine are raised, or sometimes they appoint senior counsel, they would not be available because in the next 3 months they also have a diary. They have court cases in between. The presiding office is not always available. We have a lot of misconduct inquiries, not necessarily which will place before this committee, where a removal from office is anticipated. But yeah, we are quite busy, and we have to schedule it in between all these proceedings.
Mate?
To me, it sounds clear that our only course of action is to note the progress report, or to set aside the suspension, and that we certainly don't want to do. So, if I personally correct you, we have no choice but to note the report. I suppose we do.
I'm still not convinced by the argument, but certainly we can't force the commission unless we disagree in 4 years, the professor was saying. You see, complications or complex of the matter, I hear what his answer is, but see, if we're in the mode of a criminal offence process, it's complicated. But if you are in a misconduct matter, I don't find complication. As I said, I'm not convinced. I don't know. See, legal people they use a principle and they think that the principle is you know is a way to go. But the issue. Of them not being able to use that evidence. What I'm hearing from that response is that the Magistrate Commission is only saying that it's too much evidence. They want someone to do the job easier, to make it easier for them. So on those basis, maybe we can just accept to note the non-progress, Chair, that is there. That's just we're noting the prefix, so to speak.
Chair, I was just indicating that I think we have heard. Let's move forward so that we can deal with all the
matters. Can you note the report and agree that we will wait for October, and after October, they must ensure that they speed up the misconduct case. Can you continue with the second report?
Mr. Chair, the next matter is Mr. Masinga of Umlazi. He has been charged in the regional court with he assaulted his wife, which is not to act, and threatened to kill her, and he was being criminally charged with attempted murder. Mr. Chair, the criminal case was also postponed various occasions. Mr. Masinga applied for the recusal of the presiding officer, which he later abandoned, and the state closed its case on the 24th of February. I could just mention with the latest of the regional the criminal matter is Mr. Masinga has been convicted on 23 May this year on a charge of attempted murder, and the criminal case stands postponed to the 12th of August for a pre-sentence report. Now the inquiry did proceed, and we first had problems in trying to ascertain his whereabouts and get hold of him. We did succeed in that, and then there were times that he did not appear. He contacted in Harvard to instruct an attorney to assist him, to appoint an attorney, and he was then on the inquiry and then proceeded on the 28th of March, and he requested a remand. On the 24th of May, he was represented by the attorney. He raised his attorney various points in limine, which the presiding officer wants to be addressed on the 22nd of August this year. He has been also suspended, and that is the latest in connection with Mr. Masinga. Mr. Chair, I might just indicate, the misconduct charges against Mr. Masinga. He is also being charged with contravening the Domestic Violence Act, in that he failed to comply with a court order, and he is also being charged with the assault of his wife, and also with his one daughter. These are the three charges, but now in the meantime, as I indicated, that he has already been found guilty in the criminal case, and that changes now the charge of having been found guilty of a criminal offence that's pertaining to charge one. We already submitted a letter to him. We should give reasons why his salary should not be withheld.
Honourable Matilda.
Chair, I'm not sure why, because the commissioner is supposed to take a decision. Maybe the reasons why you're submitting a letter to him, asking him why, because he has been convicted.
That is correct. That is a resolution of the commission. Yeah, that he should show cause. He must show cause why he said he should not be withheld.
Chairperson, it's just clarity. I see that the progress report dated 24 February 2011. Can I get clarity? Why is it 24 February?
Chairperson, the Commission needs to forward progress reports on a 3-monthly basis. But I think this committee only convened now, so it's only been placed on the agenda for today. But the progress report was submitted to the Minister, and it was tabled some time ago.
No, Chair, you see, I understand that, but you see, it's a briefing of today. Today's date must reflect on this report as well. Now, it looks as if the date is the 24th, the progress report. I understand what he is saying, but that must be a report that they have given us, a report on the 24th, isn't it? That is what you are saying, the 24th of February. And where's today's date?
Chair, what it means in terms of this specific report, in effect, that we should have been receiving an update on top of what we have from the 24th of February. Yeah. Because if it's quarterly, if it's every 3 months, I mean, this was February, it's June today. Yeah. That means another report should have been, possibly. We know that this has been submitted for February. Unfortunately, it could not. You could not come to the commission because there was no space for you to come and present. That we understand. But it means for the 3 months that have passed, is there a report that has been prepared? Because that must, we need, possibly there's progress on what is happening here. Maybe you can update us on the further progress besides what is here contained in this particular report.
Honourable Watson.
Yeah, see, I see it a little bit differently.
I understand the report was dated the 24th week on change day. That is the report of the status quo as at the 24th of February. That's in regard to all of this. Where the matter will be correctly reflected is in our minutes referring to the note, the agenda for today, which says that on today's date we will look at those reports of the 24th of February, and that will be reflected in the minutes. But I do agree that if it's quarterly, there should have been March, April, May, June, there should have been another report for. Maybe it's in the pipeline, I don't know. But we can't change that. That's the point.
No, Chair, Comrade Matilda is right. It must be an updated report. It can't be. You see, they have given us the report. It must be an update. The things that they are telling us now is an update where they are standing now.
We cannot consider a report that hasn't been on ATC. And if an update hasn't been on ATC, we can't consider it. Then we'll be out of violence the rules of parliament.
No, Mr. Mandy.
Just for clarity as well, because I'm hearing the dates 23, May 24, the content that was presented is of which period? Is it for the 24th of April, February?
No.
But what I've heard is it's the content of May. Right? Or is it May of last year?
What I said is that there should have been a follow-up on this one within 3 months. So if it was February, then March, April, then May should have been the next report. If the magistrate says that they, in terms of the law, they must report quarterly. And I'm also saying that if that report has not been ATC'd by Parliament, we cannot consider it.
Yeah, the point I'm at is I'm only content of what is presented. Not the date. For the content for me is of a new report. The content is of a new report, the way I'm hearing it. But written for the report of the 24th of February, if I'm correct. So I'm seeking clarity on that one, Chair. As far as I'm hearing the what has been presented, the brief, is that 23rd of May, that's what happened, 24th of May, that's what happened, that's what's going to happen in August, right? That's the content of the report now. Unless there is the other pages, because I don't see the report, I don't have it here with me, Chair. So there might be the progress of leading up to the 24th of February. So there's two contents on this, on what we are dealing with today, technically speaking. That's what I'm trying to get clarity on. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. We compiled these reports on the 24th to be tabled in Parliament by the Minister. I see the Minister on the 17th of March somewhere forwarded the reports. I'm not sure when it was tabled. We were just not aware of the fact that a new report should be. That's why we are updating the committee now on the current report, although it's not in the report. But we're giving you an update, and we will follow it up with an updated report. I think that's the idea. But we have to wait. Do we need to submit a further progress report within the 3 months, although the first report has not been tabled as yet or not been considered? If I take the act strictly, we need to make a follow-up report every 3 months.
Yeah.
How many reports will be then before? Only the latest report will be considered. Because these reports are tabled. We haven't briefed the portfolio committee on the previous reports in last year's. We haven't briefed them as yet. So I thought we have to brief you first before you consider the next report. I'm not sure. Maybe we get some guidance from you. Although the act is clear, I know.
Yeah.
Honorable Matila, Honorable Watson.
No, Chair, my understanding was that we see this report that states up to the 24th of April.
Yeah.
I was just requesting that now that possibly a lot of things could have happened up to date, if you can just update us. We will consider this report, but then we know where you are at this particular point in time. You know, so that when you table that report, we would have known and we were able to can consider in terms of that report. But what we are going to consider is this one, you know. And that, but then the committee would have been updated of the present situation, because it's a concern we are raising at this point. And that's what I've raised is by February, even before the 24th of February. I'm not sure when was he convicted, you know, of the first offense.
Only now.
No, that's an update.
Yeah.
You
so,
see?
So
yeah. That's an update, yeah.
So let's just pass the 24th because it's irrelevant. It's okay.
Thank you.
That's why I say we should note these reports, and if the others are the same, then we're debating fruitlessly, and we need updated reports as to the situation now.
Mm.
Then we can really apply them.
Yeah.
If all of those reports are just interim reports affecting the same type of a situation, and we now really close to entering the second quarter since that, then we need an update.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me check.
Thank you, Chairperson. It was actually our intention to brief you on this report, and then also we update you today on what the current situation is. That's what we've been doing now with these two matters, and we will do with the rest of the matters as well, and we will put that in the following report, and we can file that report within the next 2 weeks with the Minister's Office.
That should be good.
Chairperson, I don't intend to take it back because I've been listening a lot here. But what worries me now in this report is that we are saying this person has been convicted for criminal charges, for the criminal case. And then you are asking him a question that why can't you suspend his salary? I think there's something of that nature that you are saying. Now my interest is just to know, because I've been listening and I know some cases where senior policemen who have been found guilty in criminal courts were fired in their workplace immediately because of the nature of these cases. Now I'm interested to know, are the magistrates treated differently in terms of the cases? Because now you're saying this one, you were saying about that one before, you said if that one is winning the criminal case, then in terms of the disciplinary hearing inside, you might have problems because of witnesses. You said all this, but I was listening. Now, in this one, you are not saying firing this person because of these things, but you are saying in this one, he must write something to say maybe you can hold his salary or not. I'm just interested, are they being treated, or magistrates, are they being treated differently from other persons in the country?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, well, magistrates are not public, although they're public office bearers, and they have an own act, the Magistrates Act, which makes provision for the provisional suspension, the disciplinary process, there are regulations. Police officers are public servants, and they have unions to represent them, and that's the labor law. Although principles of labor law may be applicable to magistrates as well, they are not employees. And of course, there's the audio ultimatum patrum rule. If you take an administrative decision to suspend one's salary or withhold his salary, you will have to give him a reasonable opportunity to respond and to make representations in that regard. So we're asking him to show cause why his remuneration should not be withheld, and then his representations will be placed before the committee, before the commission, and then the commission has to consider that. If he takes us to court, then at least the commission can say that we have duly considered the request or the matter, the process. He has been given the opportunity to respond. This was his response. We made this resolution. And he can take that to court. With regard to the disciplinary processes, it is quite different. They are entitled, in terms of the Constitution, to be represented by a legal representative, or by any person, chairperson, and this prolongs the disciplinary inquiries against magistrates. I mean, they are public office bearers, and that's why Parliament have to pass a resolution whether they should be removed from office, yes or no. It's like judges. It's exactly the same like judges. It's impeachment of judges.
Okay, but to take this argument that, you see, the magistrate has just said that it's two different acts of law that governs them, the police and the magistrate. But I see here that now is representing this magistrate. And it's two different acts. He's not supposed to be represented by a union. That is exactly, you have just said that, you see. And I've asked that question the other time, last year. Is it allowed that a magistrate must belong to a union? I'm just taking this thing further, what my comrades have said.
Can you also note the report and continue with the said report?
So the next meeting is Mr. Marua of Davidton. He was found guilty in the regional court on the 11 counts of fraud. He committed fraud by endorsing the court record wrongly. He reflected that the court wherein he presided was properly constituted and that the prosecutor was present, and that the prosecutor put charges to the accused who committed traffic offence cases, and that the prosecutor had no address on the merits, and that the prosecutor proved no previous conviction, and also that the prosecutor had the opportunity to take part in the inquiries for the failure of the accused to appear in court, and listed the traffic offences while there was no prosecutor. He was then sentenced to a fine of 5,000 rand or 12 months imprisonment, and he appealed against the criminal conviction and sentence. The judges on appeal did not give judgment on 3 March, but have referred the appeal to the full bench of the North Gauteng High Court, Pretoria, and a date for the, well, that was how the report date indicated that the appeal before the full bench is thought to be determined. Now a date has in the meantime been fixed. The appeal is to be heard on Monday the 25th of July by the full bench of the High Court. And the inquiry has commenced.
Noted.
Hello. In the other report.
Sorry, Chairperson. It's Mr. Jacobs from Cookalong. You will recall that this was the drunk magistrate. The commission charged him with 10 counts of misconduct, served him a notice containing allegations on him on the 27th of May 2010. Whilst he was provisionally suspended, he was again arrested for drunken driving, and he put before the Clerkalong District Court. This charge was added. This was added But there was at the disciplinary hearing, the evidence of a psychiatrist was led. Chairperson, and he's of the view that Mr. Jacob suffers from brain atrophy. That's the shrinking of the brain due to the excessive use of alcohol. Now, Chairperson, but he concluded that it is still Mr. Jacob's, it is within his willpower to go to the liquor store and buy liquor, and buy food, and buy liquor. So the inquiry was then changed to a regulation 27 regulation, which is a regulation into the capacity of Mr. Jacobs to perform his functions of office efficiently. This was done in agreement with both parties, or with the party, and having heard the evidence of the clinical psychologist, the misconduct inquiry was with the commission mandated to do so then, converted to this inquiry, and the presiding officer on the 18th of April found Mr. Jacobs not to have the capacity to carry out his duties of office efficiently, and that he be removed from office. I'll be just waiting his report. It will be the presiding officer indicated that he will give it to me at the end of this week, so that we can have it. Well, Mr. Jacobs has 10 days to make representations to the commission, and then we'll place it before the commission for a recommendation that he be removed from office, which then, of course, that report will be forwarded to the minister to be tabled in Parliament.
That is not it.
But it is really an embarrassment to clock along.
And then you see, there's a occupied time,
but I don't know when it's just on a lightly note, he said he's not drinking beer because vodka is a jealousy drink. It's a jealous drink.
Run away, let me drink it.
We can continue from our report. Mr. Duman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dumani is already charged and found guilty of misconduct. He was initially charged with four counts of misconduct, and he was then found guilty of three of the four. It was all sexual harassment matters in which the complainants were ladies of the office, administrative personnel, and the presiding officer recommended that Mr. Dumani be removed from office. He was given the opportunity to lodge representations with the commission, which was received, and I can just indicate the representations was that he says, I'm the victim of a racist smear campaign launched and perpetrated against me by white staff members who are vehemently opposed to the transformation policy. And I'm not confident, unfortunately, that the Methodist Commission, which in my humble view is heavily loaded with whites, will be able to protect me against this racist onslaught. I can just mention that all the ladies, none of them were white. In any event, Mr. Dumani then filed a motion application with the High Court requesting the court to interdict and restrain the minister from taking any further action against him pending the final determination of another application before the court to review and set aside the presiding officer's decision in the disciplinary proceedings convicting Mr. Dumani of the three counts. And the review application is being opposed by the state. The application was to be heard on the 24th of March 2011, and we were informed that unfortunately the postponement due to administrative problems at the Gauteng High Court could not be heard. The email reads, we advise that Judge Pickering, who was due to hear the matter, has requested the register to enroll this matter in the appeal roll, as the matter must be heard by two judges. at that step, and that step was taken to avoid the problem that arose on the previous occasion. I phoned the day before yesterday, and I was informed that the due date, we are still awaiting the due date. He is still receiving a salary.
Noted. One is drunk and one is sexually active.
Mr. Murake.
Thank you, Chairperson. Magistrates are all human beings. Chairperson, Mr. Murake, he was charged inter alia on 10 counts of misconduct, but two of them relate to a conviction of theft, two charges of theft. He was initially charged with three charges of theft. He was convicted on the 18th of October on two charges, and the matter was postponed to the 5th of February for sentence, the 1st of February this year. Mr. Murake, however, terminated the mandate of his attorney, I'm in paragraph 2.3, and the matter stands now postponed, well, it stood postponed to the 1st of April. Just to update you in terms of what happened after the 1st of April, that's now on paragraph 2.3. The criminal case was on the 1st of April again postponed to the 13th of May because Mr. Murake's attorney fell ill. And on the 13th of May, Mr. Murake indicated that he wants to call witnesses to testify in mitigation. The case was therefore remanded to the 25th of June, that was yesterday, for this purpose. And I've just been informed that Mr. Murake was sentenced to 4 years imprisonment on each count in terms of Section 276I of the Criminal Procedure Act. The terms are to run concurrently. So he is to at least sit a minimum of 6 months in imprisonment. But he indicated that he is going to take the matter on appeal. He has been granted leave to appeal. With the 2.4, on page 3, that paragraph said the Magistrates Commission charged Mr. Murake with the several counts of misconduct. And having considered Mr. Murake's written explanation on the charges of misconduct, the Ethics Committee at its meeting held on the 10th of February resolved that the misconduct inquiry be proceeded with. We commenced with this inquiry, and on the 11th of April, Mr. Murake's representative requested the presiding officer to postpone the disciplinary proceedings against Mr. Murake pending the outcome of the criminal matter that is now sentenced. They argued that Mr. Murake will appeal against his conviction once the sentence has been imposed and requested that the inquiry be kept in abeyance until after the outcome of the criminal case on appeal. The presiding officer granted the postponement until Friday, the 24th of June, provided that Mr. Murake should submit proof of the fact that he indeed filed an appeal against his criminal conviction and theft. Chairperson, the Commission will argue on Friday. I will be there to represent the Commission's case before the presiding officer that we may charge him for having been found guilty of an offence, and also a letter has been addressed to him to show cause why his salary should not be withheld. That is the position at the moment.
Noted. The last report of Mr. Skrenya.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Minister, Mr. Skrenya, from Kala. There are the charges are that he was criminally also charged at the moment for pending or going on, and the criminal charge was flowing from that he travelled with his private motor vehicle 3 metre on an official journey from Kala to Dordrecht and submitted a false claim for travelling allowance to the senior magistrate, whereas in truth, and he travelled with a state vehicle, a Toyota, and therefore was not entitled to submit any claim for travelling allowance, and thereby did not committed fraud. The criminal trial is still pending in that regard, and he is to appear in court on the 28th of June. So this is he's also now being charged for misconduct for that, and with there are two other charges as well, and that is that he, in a case at the courthouse Kala, he refused to adhere to a request by the prosecutor in a criminal case to withdraw the charge before plea. The prosecutor asked that the case be withdrawn, and he refused. And he then postponed the case for more than a month and ordered that the accused be kept in custody. And he acted to the detriment of the discipline or the efficiency of the administration of justice. And the other is that he held a court which was also at Kala, which was not properly constituted, and postponed various criminal cases in chambers in the absence of the prosecutor. These are all the misconduct charges against him. Regarding the misconduct inquiry, it had proceeded, and it's fixed for the it's to go further on the 4th of July next month. That is the situation now with Spindler at this stage. Chair.
Yes, thank you. They're going to take note of that. Thank you very much for the update report. Honorable members, we were supposed to deal with reports. Adoption of minutes, and we are not correcting. Three members requested to be excused, and as a result, we cannot adopt these minutes. Gashun will arrange. I don't know whether it will be possible for us to meet next week just for the adoption. But if that is possible, members will be notified timely. And as a result, this then brings us to the end of the meeting. Honorable Matila?
Which I was just indicating that we all received the minutes.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be a long meeting next week.
Okay. Yes, can honorable members in the meantime go through those minutes so that next week we just adopt them. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, that you mentioned.
Take care, person. I will take care.
Gunther. No presentation. How's the doctor? But it's on paper. I've only got the recording.
Yeah,
he's the guy today and last week. Because I
keep on calling him. Okay, I'll play on there. So, I'll also buzz off a move before we have to udala waphendula wathi ten uzifumene kuzo zoyithundi but uphendule kwi-blackberry yakhe ngale kala kajimi shatisa.
This is a very thick document. So is it electronic copy? Can I borrow it?
Oh, there is an electronic copy.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got it from
home. I've got it today also. So can I borrow it?
Yeah,
and have any
yes, let's just do the first stage. The copy of the first stage. Oh, you don't need it.
I've got a copy.
Alright. Oh, you've made a copy for us.
Yeah.
That's good.
But this can stay.
Yes, it can stay. As long as I do have it. Oh, you didn't make it. Oh, I thought maybe you made it. You don't want to make a copy?
I've got a copy.
Oh, you've got a copy. Black and white, give me the copy.
Okay.
Yes, and take this one. Okay.
Earlier.
Yeah, Bill.
Got a. Someone who sings there as well. Let's tell him.
Where is it? Okay. All the other stuff of it.
Okay.
Yes, I can see. Yes, there is another stuff. All right. Okay, see you.